Hi, I'm Sabrina Petrofessa.
And I'm Lily Rugo.
And we're back with this. I don't even know what my words were about. And we're back with Earth's Mightiest Fangirls.
Hello. We're not fully back. We're partially back. This is a little bonus episode because, a lot's been happening.
We thought that we'd update you guys on, like, where we're at with posting again and also, you know, the sad news of Stan Lee's passing.
Yeah, this podcast wouldn't exist without him, so we felt like we should address and talk about him a bit.
So I actually found out that Stan Lee died because Lily texted me in the middle of the night.
Yeah, we are currently 12 hours apart and in two very separate countries.
Yes, very, very separate. Yes, I did finally make it to Thailand, so I am here.
Yay.
Been here for, almost a month.
Yeah. Is today the month mark? Did you fly out on the 14th?
Flew out on the 17th.
Oh, okay.
Well, technically, I, like, left for the airport on the 16th.
Right.
But, you know, tomato, tomato. I flew out on the 17th, got to Thailand on the 18th of October.
Yeah, nice. How was the flight? How long was that flight?
Awful. Actually, better than most flights that I've ever been on because, shout out to Korean Air. I walked onto that flight. Not only did I have a pillow and a blanket, I also had slippers.
Ooh. And this is like economy?
I had slippers. I had a water bottle. I think I had like over-the-ear headphones.
Yeah. Korean Air is really nice.
I was shocked because I've been on quite a few flights before.
Mm-hmm.
All of them were to Europe, granted, but still, I've been on a lot of flights before.
Yeah.
So when I walked onto that flight and I saw like a water bottle, I don't think you can understand how like happy I was. Yeah, but it took me 30 hours to fly from JFK to Bangkok.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. And that's not even including the time it took me to get to the airport and then the time it took me to get from the airport in Bangkok to my hotel.
Mm. Do you have any layovers?
Yes, I had one in Korea.
Oh, okay, yeah. So Thailand's going well.
Thailand is going well. Guess how many students I have?
Because you're teaching two grades.
I'm teaching two grades.
Is it like 10 per class?
LOL.
Wait, is that super low?
That's super low.
Super low. Okay, do you have like 20 per class? I'm just going to go by 10s.
Keep going. Keep going.
I'm just going to go by 10s. 30?
Keep going.
40.
Keep going.
60.
50.
50. Damn it, the one I skipped.
I know, you skipped the exact one. I have... Well, max, I have 48 students in a class.
Wow. Guess that is a lot of freshmen. 3.
21.
Wow, that is a full day.
No, so I teach 21 classes every week.
Oh, okay.
So I only meet with my students once a week, and I have 822 students.
Wow.
Because I see all of the freshmen, mm-hmm. or M3, mm-hmm. and all of the seniors, or M6.
That's a lot of 14-year-olds running around your life.
14 and 18-year-olds, yeah.
Yeah.
I've got about 470 of the 14-year-olds and, like, whatever the rest of that is, mm-hmm. is my seniors.
Right. The reason I guess so low is, one, I'm surprised they would do that to,
No, that's just, like, how it is here, though. Like, that's how their class structure is.
That makes sense. Okay. But also, the photos that you posted didn't have, like, a massive amount of students, so I just thought you were in, like, a very small school.
That was literally only one of my classes.
Oh.
Like, and I only took pictures with that one class because my co-teacher, who is, like, a Thai teacher, and, like, my director of, like, the department, she started taking pictures of us to be like, I want you to have memories for when you leave.
Aw.
She's the best. I love her.
That's
her
really
name
nice.
Is Fawn, but I call her P-Fawn, which is, like, a term of endearment / respect. I think, like, P directly translated means, like, older sibling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, to, like, show respect, you say P. So I call her P-Fawn.
Oh, and that's I love nice. Her. Yeah.
And I love her. She's amazing and adorable, and I love her.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah. Glad Thailand, or I guess not all of Thailand, but I'm glad your move to Thailand has been going well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been pretty cool. So I guess now on to the somber part of this.
Yeah. This isn't just a test call.
Yeah. But like straight up, I woke up Tuesday morning for me, and I see like a message from Lily that just says Stan Lee died.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I didn't send this to you, but my thought was, that's like such a shitty way to wake up.
I sent it because I heard it from our friend Kevin. He was the first person to get in touch with me. And then once I verified it, I was like, well, the first person I have to tell has to be Sabrina, my co-host. And then I sent it and I was like, she's on a very different time zone right now.
Yeah.
This is going to really affect her day.
What time did you send it?
I'm looking now. I sent it at 2:13 my time. Because I was like...
2 a.m. in the morning. I was so asleep.
I wondered if you were going to be asleep because I was like, sometimes she stays up late, but like, no, she has a job now.
No, so. I have a job. I have to be at the school at 8.
Mm.
So I wake up at 7 to give myself enough time to wake up and like shower before I go in.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Thailand is hot and I sweat all the time. TMI, but who cares? It's very hot here. I'm currently suffering without my fan or my AC.
Yeah, we'll make this quick.
But, I mean, like, I'm actually not suffering. It's not too bad. Yeah, so I woke up to that, and then I went to school. And I have pretty light Mondays, so during my free times, I just was, like, looking stuff up about Stanley.
Mm-hmm.
I was disappointed that he was dead, but I didn't have a lot of, like, strong emotions about it.
I saw a lot of people posting photos of him, photos of their characters, and just kind of going, talking a lot about how much he meant to them. And being a co-host of a Marvel podcast, I kind of felt bad that I didn't have any strong emotions about Stan Lee. Like, I'll miss his cameos, and I appreciate the work that he did, obviously. I love the MCU and stuff, but I just didn't have as much attachment to the man himself.
Well, so here's the thing with me. I posted on Twitter when I found out, not maybe a few hours after I found out, something along the lives of along the lines of how grateful I am for the stories and the characters he created, for bringing so much like joy and pain into my life through his stories and characters and cameos.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have a lot of strong emotions, but I am very grateful to him for creating a environment and he didn't create the company, but creating a workforce that fostered the environment to create these characters and give them voice and allow me to read about them and watch the movies and enjoy these characters in a way that honestly like no other generation has been able to enjoy. Or at least like previous to this, you know, like everyone can enjoy Marvel films, but like previous to 2008, the MCU was just like not even a possibility.
Yeah.
So I'm very grateful to him for giving me something that truly changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I if I do not like Marvel? Truly, so much of like my knowledge and like my likes and dislikes come from Marvel films and Marvel characters and comic book heroes in general, even though I was never like huge into comic books. So yeah, I'm grateful for what he did for Marvel.
Yeah, like he was a creative force, you know. So you know, respect and appreciate the things that he's done for that. I've seen Stan Lee with my own eyes.
What?
Yeah. He came to Boston Comic Con 2 years ago, the first and only year I went with a press pass with my internship at the time. So he did.
Wait,
this, like,
I actually think I remember you telling me this when it happened.
Yeah. So I went to his panel. Actually, I ended up a little late, but I knew he was there, and I was just like, oh, I mean, it's Stan Lee. I at least want to, like, see him. So I did, and I had my camera, so I got some photos of Stan Lee. But I remember beforehand, for an article I was doing at my internship, I was interviewing the organizer of Comic-Con, and he was talking about, like, yeah, we got Stan Lee. It's going to be his last appearance. And I remember, and I was like, what? He's like, oh. And then the guy just kept going on. I was like, go back. Why isn't Stan Lee doing any more appearances? And he's like, oh, I meant on the East Coast. Stan Lee isn't doing any more East Coast Comic-Con appearances. And I was just like, okay, just good. Just double checking. Because there was a hot second, I thought there was something, you know, not okay with Stan Lee that entire summer. But yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He was just so...
It's actually very stressful.
He was so blasé about, like, wait, did I just accidentally get a major scoop? Like, yeah. Is Stan Lee okay? He's like, oh, yeah, he's fine. He's just not going to be in any East Coast events for a while. I'm just like, okay, that's fine.
I also remember his wife died last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing pictures of, like, him and his wife on my Twitter and then going, oh, my God, 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 because I thought he was dead. And then, like, it was his wife. And, like, obviously, I did not... It doesn't bring me joy that she was dead.
But you, like, were relieved.
That wasn't like, oh, like, thank God it wasn't him. Like, yeah, but, yeah, you know, yeah. Like, when I saw it, I was like, oh, okay, not Stan Lee. Oh, no, like, poor Stan Lee.
Yeah.
Then I was like, his wife is dead.
Yeah. They were together for a long time. I remember seeing that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think The New York Times said that he's survived by his daughter.
Only one child.
He had a second child who died, like, 4 days after they were born.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Yeah. Honestly, I was, like, really surprised when I was reading this obit. I was very shocked. But also, the New York Times kind of wrote a weird obit for him.
Oh, dear. What did the NYT do now?
I mean, it's not... So I read the whole thing. Most of it's not bad. It really is just kind of like not an autobiography. What?
Yeah.
It's a biography. It's mostly just like a biography of, like, him. Mm-hmm. And it's very like, Stan Lee, he's the man. And, like, everyone is obsessed with the fact that he was not born Stan Lee.
Oh.
His name was Stan Lee something. Hold on, sorry. Like, his first name was Stan Lee.
Right.
And then his last name was, like, Lieber.
Mm.
Stanley Martin Lieber. I wanted to say, like, Leibowitz or something, which is not at all true because he's not Jewish and, like, that's not the right thing to say. Lieber is his
name.
Right. And then he legally changed it to Stan Lee, which is allegedly because he was embarrassed to be writing for comic books.
Right.
So he was writing under the pen name of Stan Lee. But the other thing that we have to be grateful for is Stan Lee is the reason why the characters became so human and so, like, relatable. He said that he was done and bored with, like, these larger-than-life characters who could do no wrong, and he started writing characters that had, like, heart and pain, and they were real people, and they suffered like everyone else. Yes, they're superheroes, but when they take off that mask, they're like just like everybody else.
Oh, that's, yeah, that makes sense, because I know Marvel at the time when they started and these characters came out, they were like the scrappy little up-and-comer compared to the, like, behemoth that was DC.
I mean, they kind of came up at the same time.
Yeah.
Marvel became Marvel after, I think, like, a couple decades or something. Mm-hmm. Like, they were called Timely Comics? Here, hold on. Timely Publications. So that's what he was at. He was working for Timely Publications, and then slowly they became Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he started as something called a gopher.
The errand runner. I have
no idea what the... Okay, oh, so, yeah. So he was, like, an errand runner. And then, like, I ended up becoming, like, the editor-in-chief.
That's...
Which is crazy.
A goal. Dreams.
Yeah. Yeah, right? Like, how does that happen? I don't know. Yeah. I really, really don't. A quote from the New York Times is that he told Washington Post in 1992 that, Mr. Lee tried to make them real flesh and blood characters with personality in regards to his characters.
Mm-hmm.
Another quote, that's what any story should have, but comics didn't have until that point. They were all cardboard figures.
Mm.
So, like, we gotta thank him for creating a character like Tony Stark, who is broken and sad.
Yeah, I mean, the actors, we wouldn't love the actors and their portrayal as much if they just had terribly flat characters. Like, that's half the grit. To Captain America.
Yeah. Well, he didn't create Captain America. Jack Kirby created Captain America, who is also heralded as, like, the king of comics. He's, like, he's a very big deal when it comes to these comics, because, like, I know this is about Stan Lee, but real quick, like, sidetrack to Jack Kirby. I read a story once, maybe I can find it and we can link to, like, the proof that this actually happened in the story notes, or in the podcast notes, that there was someone, a disgruntled fan, who was really upset with Captain America and didn't like the portrayal of Captain America and didn't like, you know, how much he was into being a good person.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy comes to the offices of Marvel and is like, hey, man, like, I want to talk to the guys who write Captain America because I have a bone to pick with them. But, like, little does this guy know is that Jack Kirby and I think Steve Ditko is the other writer, I don't remember, it might not be, they're, like, huge guys, like, huge, because they fought in World War II, like, right. they're these huge, like, tough guys, and, like, this guy must be thinking, he's just, like, a little wimp who writes comic books. And he comes down and is like, heard you wanted to talk to me. I'm like, scared the crap out of this guy. And, like, runs away. He's like, never mind.
Oh, man.
Captain America's good. And, like, runs away. So I kind of love that stuff where you're mm-hmm. like, ah, this guy's awesome. Yeah, so we have Jack Kirby to thank for Captain America.
My bad. I'm probably like most other people who refuse to educate myself. But anything Marvel, I just assume Stan Lee...
Yeah.
Not, like, solely it on his own, but, like, I just assume that he was one of the creators or driving forces behind all of the Avengers. Not, like, the Avengers, all five of them.
Yeah, I mean, like, the important thing to know with Captain America is that he was created by a Jewish man.
Mm.
And that Jewish man was Jack Kirby.
Right, right.
So it's, like, very important to know that Jack Kirby, a Jewish man who grew up in, like, poverty... in New York City, so, like,
yeah,
created Captain America.
Right. And I've heard the name.
Well, because I'm sure, especially, like, when you're watching the movies, when the credits roll, it's, like, created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby.
Right, right, right.
I also want to talk about, you know, Stan Lee's not-so-great legacy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to, like, write it off as, like, a pass, but obviously no one is perfect. There are not great things that Stan Lee has done in his career.
So we are, in fact, like, indebted to him we are indebted in... It's been a long day. I taught 5 classes today. We are indebted to him for creating what we know now is the MCU. Because I think it was in the 80s when Stan Lee went out to Hollywood to be like, make movies out of our comics.
Mm.
Make them, like, people will love this. Like, mm-hmm. So he was a driving force behind creating movies for this franchise.
Right.
But really quickly, I want to read a little bit from an article about him. This is from The Daily Beast, written by Spencer Ackerman. So, and a little expert. Lee's legacy at Marvel is immortal, but so too is the debate and controversy over what that legacy specifically is. In some quarters in comics, and especially to devotees of Kirby, Stan Lee is a supervillain, a man who stole credit and corresponding fortunes from the people who truly shaped Marvel creatively in the 60s, relegating them to also-ran obscurity. Mm. Aspects of that critique uncomfortably have merit. Lee had a maestro's instincts for what we now call branding, and it cast a shadow long enough to keep his Marvel collaborators in darkness. In press interviews, his endless public appearances, and his own writing, Lee portrayed himself as the driver of the Marvel Universe, rendering artists like Kirby and Spider-Man co-creator Steve Ditko as afterthoughts. For all his self-deprecation, when press accounts focused on Lee exclusively, he rarely saw fit to correct the record. Accordingly, the movies always credit Stan Lee and it was never blank and Stan Lee, nor blanks with Stan Lee.
Right.
The article goes into a lot about how you don't know really what Stan Lee was involved with and how much he created because mm-hmm. He started to become very hands-off, and that there were articles written about Marvel where he would be there, like, in the writers' rooms and try and, like, brainstorm ideas and stuff, but and that those articles often ended up being, like, hero worship to Stan Lee and forgetting that, like, these other artists and other creators were in the room. Like, one article had Jack Kirby written as, like, the villain in the article and talking about how, like, awful he looked that day and, like, really focusing on his appearance and how, like, he didn't look good in comparison to Stan Lee, who was there and working. And it's just, like, so awful because Jack Kirby is just as much a creator of Marvel and just as much of the driving force behind how we know and recognize Marvel today than Stan Lee is.
I mean, it's what I said earlier. I didn't realize Captain America wasn't something Stan Lee created, but it's the people love the idea of the lone genius myth. It's why everyone loves Edison and Steve Jobs. So it's not surprising that Stan Lee, not surprising. It's very prescient. It's impressive that Stan Lee was able to recognize the power of how that myth around him would help him so much later in life.
Yeah, and again, I don't know we don't know everything, and like this is my like journalist side coming in where I don't want to say anything that is untrue or inaccurate because end of the day, we weren't there. We don't know what it was like, but we do know that Jack Kirby's family did try and get like royalties for Captain America because, and like other Jack Kirby comic creations.
Mm-hmm.
Because when Jack Kirby was working for Marvel, he was working as a freelancer. Unlike Stan Lee, who was, like, the Marvel guy. Like,
right.
He was actually, like, working for Marvel and not just, like, a freelancer. So that's why people have issue with him is because Jack Kirby probably never got paid as much as Stan Lee did for doing more work.
Right, right. That makes sense.
And there's also a lot, like, of controversy around who actually created Spider-Man. Like, some people say it was Kirby, some people say it was Ditko, some people say it was Stan Lee. Like, I think now they have decided that it's just Stan Lee and Ditko. But like, people say, like, Kirby was also involved because he, like, wrote a similar character that Stan Lee just decided to, like, change to Spider-Man. But that's very, like, up in the air. Like, you don't know.
Right.
And there are a lot of... there's a lot of stuff out there saying that Stan Lee is, like, homophobic and racist and sexist. And not to, like, give excuses for him, but he was 95 years old.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
And, like, yeah, there are other, like, really old celebrities out there who are not homophobic or racist or sexist or in any shape, way, shape, or form. But, like, I don't think... And, again, I don't know what kind of environment he created in the offices. Like, maybe it was like that in the offices of Marvel. But his outward appearance was not like that at all. And it's been a couple of days since his death, and I feel like if there's anything...
Truly terrible?
Standing and truly terrible, it would have come out by now.
Yeah. Like, I think he... One, people can change.
Mm-hmm.
People can be one way of, like, you know, how things were back then and then realize error of their ways later in life. So, like, I would say, yeah, people can change. Or people can just get better at hiding it.
Yeah, and I mean, I understand the homophobic allegations a little bit more because, Stan Lee never outright created an LGBT character like himself.
Yeah.
And honestly, there aren't a lot of LGBT, like, characters at the forefront of Marvel. As much as we would love to paint them as LGBT, they're, like...
They're all straight.
Canonically not. They're all straight.
Yeah.
Which is disappointing. He's, like, gone on the record saying, like, he just never thought about it and that he never thought to make any of his characters queer. And,
mm-hmm.
Like, if there was... If fans wanted it, he would do it. But he also believed that characters like Spider-Man who already exist and are white and straight should not be changed to, like, fit anything. And I think that was his way of, like, protecting his own creations and being, like...
Yeah.
No, like, don't... Like, he's my character. He's white and he's straight and he's a teenage boy. Like, stop that.
Yeah, the author's not dead type stuff.
Yeah. But I kind of agree with him in that sense where it's, like, don't just, like, change the characters you see. Create characters.
Yeah.
To be what you want. You know, like... Yes, it would be super awesome and important if Spider-Man was bisexual or gay or whatever. But, like, Peter Parker is his own character. Maybe if you want something, not to be obnoxious about it, but, like, if you want something different from that, check out, like, Miles Morales.
Yeah, like, I don't blame Sam for being a little protective over his own characters, but Marvel, like, being, like... I don't know. I didn't know where I was going to go with that. But, like, his own characters, that is how he's going to be.
Yeah. I mean, like, my whole point is, like, actually just to create more content. Create more content to reflect the world around you. Don't just change the things that we already have. It just becomes repetitive to, like, see Spider-Man again, but this time with a boyfriend. You know?
Like, yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
That's all I mean. Like, create just a new character who does reflect you more or the world more in a different way, but, like, someone different, someone new.
But I saw a while ago, Hollywood Reporter also shared that he would write a column, I think they said. Stan's Soapbox. It was part of the bullpen bulletins that appeared monthly in Marvel Comics from 1965 to 2001. And in one of them in 1968, he was...
quote you're gonna say.
Yeah, he was just calling out racism in it. And so, again, not saying he was... I'm not saying that, like, this one lone column is proof that Stan Lee was never racist, but, like, people have gray areas.
He was smart enough to at least be publicly against it.
Yeah, in 1968, too. And then he shared it again. The reason this came up in my timeline recently is because he shared it again whenever the Charlottesville white power rally was happening. So he shared it again then.
Fucking
and
Nazis.
He said, like, it's as true today as it was in 1968. And he wrote 50 years ago that racism and bigotry are among the deadliest social ills plaguing the world today. But unlike a team of costume supervillains, they can't be halted with a punch. The only way to destroy them is to expose them, to reveal from the insidious evil they really are. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised if he was, like, inherently or low-key racist, because white, very rich white man...
Or 95 years old.
Yeah, like, he's gonna have some biases that he may not realize, or maybe he does realize we're very racist, but I also think that, like, he had a platform and he used it as he did.
And he used it for mostly good things. He used it for mostly good things, and if he ever did it for bad things, it was, like, accidental. I mean, I just remember that, really quickly, just heading back to the Spider-Man thing, when they transitioned from Sony back to Marvel, or they had that whole deal when they were making that contract, in the contract it stipulated that Spider-Man has to be white and he has to be straight.
Oh.
Like, literally in the contract it says you cannot change his race or his sexuality. He is Peter Parker. He is a teenage boy. He does live with his Aunt May. Like, there was, like, a bunch that was like, you cannot change this part of him. All because Andrew Garfield had been like, I mean, like, what if MJ was a dude?
Yeah.
But again, back to my other point of, like, create new characters that actually have something to do with it. And a lot of the LGBT community really identified with the X-Men characters specifically. Because mm-hmm. of, I mean, I always saw the X-Men as a, what's that thing called? Allegory?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what the word is. I saw the X-Men as an allegory for racism and disability. And
wasn't that on purpose?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. But, like, they were created a really long time ago. And, like, the main purpose of them, I think, was to be an allegory for racism. Mm-hmm. And then it slowly also became an allegory for disability and mm-hmm. for LGBT people. LGBT plus, because the story that they tell is so relatable to those groups. Like, you can't change being a mutant just as much as you can't change being being gay or being mm-hmm. trans or being black or Asian or
yeah
Latino or whatever. Or as I once saw, like, a Tumblr post that was like, this is what it's like to have a visible disability and an invisible disability, from, like, a scene from the X-Men movies where some characters were like, oh my god, there's a cure to be, like, normal and not a mutant, and the others were like, why would you ever want to do that, stop it. Mm. And, like, the difference is, like, the people who wanted the cure, their mutant abilities were like, I could kill someone,
right,
and, like, I can't touch people, or literally, when people look at me, they run away in fear because of how I look.
Right.
And, like, things like that. So, like, I'm assuming that whoever wrote that post was disabled, but I don't know. So they were, like, equating it to that. How, like, people with invisible illnesses or invisible disabilities are like, why would I ever want to change the way that I am just to fit society? Like, they should accept me. But then there are people with, like, super visible illnesses, and it affects their daily life in such mm-hmm. a way that, like, if there was a cure, they would take it, you know?
Yeah.
So the X-Men is, like, a great example of how stuff that Stan Lee was directly a part of affected the world positively, because they could see themselves represented in these characters.
Yeah, I know X-Men, some people were saying, like, the MCU and the characters of the MCU are great, but if you want real, like, topical story characters and plot, it's the X-Men universe.
Yeah, which is why, like, completely sidetracked, but, like, which is why I'm always disappointed that those two, like, worlds can't be connected in the films.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that there was so much of a fight to get Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver because they're actually mutants, and they had to change that whole storyline.
Right.
Just to be able to have them. But I love the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully one day when we're all cut up, we can do an episode about the X-Men, because I absolutely want to.
Okay. I just have to watch all of them.
Maybe, yeah. A few. Definitely the first one. Don't bother with X3. That one's awful.
Mm.
So those are my thoughts and feelings about Stan Lee and his death and his legacy.
Yeah, I mean, mostly right, equal to mine. Again, I feel bad for how how invested I am in his work, if not him himself, and how little I know about the history of his work. But I appreciate and respect the man and his legacy. Thank you for... Yeah.
Rest in peace.
Truly.
Stan Lee. You did a lot of good for this world.
Mm.
And normally I would say we'll be with you till the end of the line. But today I leave you... I think we will leave you with Excelsior. We should be back in a couple of weeks. Definite date is not out yet, but if you want to know, follow us on Twitter at EMFangirls. Check out our website, EMFangirls. Check out our website, earthsmightiestfangirls.com. You can find me and Lily on Twitter at TheSabrinaPet and Lily_Rugo.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed this little mini ep.
We'll catch up and a little sad, but
yeah,
hopefully you enjoyed it. And we will be back soon.
Yeah, we
please
will return.
Catch up on any episodes you may have missed.
There's some good ones in there.
It's a good time to catch up since we won't be back for a bit.
Thank you to Dexter Britton for letting us use their song Wonderland, and thanks to us for editing and producing internationally now.
Internationally. How crazy is that?